May 24, 1904. Heathen Plots, Number 2. Ellen G. White. Despite all the plots of enemies, open and secret, the work of building went steadily forward. The wall rose to the proper height, and in about 2 months after Nehemiah's arrival at Jerusalem, the holy city was girded round with its defenses, and the builders could walk upon its walls and look forth upon their astonished adversaries. Says Nehemiah, "When all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God." Yet the striking evidence that the hand of the Lord was with Nehemiah was not sufficient to restrain discontent, rebellion, and treachery. In those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah. Here are seen the evil results of intermarriage with idolaters. In this union, Satan had gained the victory. A family of Judah had connected themselves with the enemies of God, and the relation had proved a snare to the people. Many others also united in marriage with the heathen. These, like the mixed multitude that came up with Israel from Egypt, were a source of constant trouble. They were not wholehearted in the service of God. When his work demanded a sacrifice, they were ready to violate their own solemn oaths of cooperation and support. All this had tended to weaken and discourage those who sought to build up the cause of God. Some who had been foremost in plotting mischief against the Jews and endeavoring by every possible means to cause their ruin now professed a great desire to be on friendly terms with them. Some of the nobles of Judah, who had become entangled in idolatrous marriages, had held traitorous correspondence with Tobiah, and had taken oath to serve him. They now presumed to represent this agent of Satan as a man of ability, wisdom, and foresight, and urged that an alliance with him would be highly advantageous to the Jews. At the same time, they betrayed to him Nehemiah's plans and movements. Thus the work of God was laid open to his enemies, and opportunity was given them not only to misconstrue Nehemiah's words and acts and circulate false reports concerning him, but to lay plans to counteract his efforts and hinder his work. Yet this man, who had so boldly stood in defense of the oppressed, did not exercise the authority with which he was invested and bring to punishment these traitors in the camp. Calmly and unselfishly, he went forward in the service of his people, never dreaming of slackening his efforts, though they should be repaid only with ingratitude and treachery. The whole power and policy of Satan have always been aimed at those who are zealously seeking to advance the cause and work of God. Though often baffled, he as often renews his assaults. But it is when he works in secret that he is most to be feared. The advocates of unpopular truth must expect opposition from its open enemies. This is often fierce and cruel, but it is far less dangerous than the secret enmity of those who profess to be serving God, while at heart they are servants of Satan. While apparently uniting in the work of God, many are connected with his foes. And if in any way crossed in their plans or reproved for their sins, they court the favor of the enemies of truth, and open to them all the plans of God's servants and the workings of his cause. Thus, they place every advantage in the hands of those who use all their knowledge to hinder the work of God and injure his people. Thus, these men of two minds and two purposes pretend to serve God, and then go over to the enemy and serve him, as best suits their inclination. Every device which the Prince of Darkness can suggest will be employed to induce God's servants to form a compromise with the agents of Satan. Repeated solicitations will come in to call us from duty, but, like Nehemiah, we should steadfastly reply, "I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down." We have no time to seek the favor of the world, or even to defend ourselves from their misrepresentation and calumny. We have no time to lose in self-vindication. We should keep steadily at our work and let that refute the falsehoods which malice may coin to our injury. Slanders will be multiplied if we stop to answer them. Should we allow our enemies to gain our friendship and sympathy, and thereby allure us from our post of duty? Should we, by any unguarded act, expose the cause of God to reproach, and thus weaken the hands of the workers, we should bring upon our characters a stain not easily removed, and place a serious obstacle in the way of our own future usefulness. Those temptations are most dangerous, which come from the professed servants of God, and from our friends. When persons who are uniting with the world, yet claiming great piety and love, counsel the faithful workers for God to be less zealous and more conservative, our answer must be an appeal to the Word of God. When they plead for union with those who have been our determined opposers, we should fear and shun them, as decidedly as did Nehemiah. Those who would lead away from the old landmarks to form a connection with the ungodly cannot be sent of heaven. Whatever may have been their former position, their present course tends to unsettle the faith of God's people. Such counselors are prompted by Satan. They are time servers. The testimonies, reproofs, and warnings of God's servants are unpalatable to them, being a reproof to their worldly, pleasure-loving propensities. We should shun this class as resolutely as did Nehemiah. When plied with the arguments and suggestions of such advisers, it would be well for us each to inquire, should I, who am a Christian, a child of God, one called to be the light of the world, a preacher of righteousness, who have so often expressed my confidence in the truth and the way in which the Lord has led us, should I unite my influence with those who bitterly oppose the work of God? Should I, a steward of the mysteries of God, open to his worst enemies the counsels of his people? Would not such a course embolden the wicked in their opposition to the truth of God and to his covenant-keeping people? Would not such concession prevent me from opening my lips in exhortation, warning, or entreaty in my own family or in the church of God? If Paul or Peter were placed in similar circumstances, would he thus betray a sacred trust? Would not even men of the world despise me? Would they not scorn to be diverted from their life work by difficulties or perils? Satan will work by any and every means which he can employ to discourage the active servants of God. If the shepherd can be beguiled from his duty, then the way is clear for wolves to scatter and devour the sheep. Every success of the truth discourages the enemies of God, and they are sometimes forced to acknowledge that it is his work, while they hate it the more on that very account. False brethren will continue to increase. Those to whom God has sent warnings and reproofs, but who, rejecting the heaven-sent message, give heed to the counsel of his enemies, are the severest trial to his faithful servants. They that forsake the law praise the wicked. Mrs. E. G. White.